Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that sound. Wiggly.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Yeah. Up the lines are like I'm in an ice ring. And some shit so clean it drip like ice cream. The last one left, the lead cause of death. Just that nicotine flow, so bitch cut the check. Me and day one, my A1. There, one of your soft ass clowns to say something. We come through bumping like an Impala. We keep the vibe so right, bitches wanna swallow. I'ma smoke it up, yeah, like smoke. I run it up for my feeling in black. Nigga, if it ain't rough, it ain't never gonna be sure. I'm like the rapper John Lil, disappear like Houdini, still raw with the steel. The illest in the building, I specialize in killing and give a mad ass fuck how you motherfuckers feeling. I'm chilling with my nigga, chopping game by the million and staying on my ground, blowing pine up the ceiling. Illa killer cackalacks, 647s to them Lincolns and them Cadillacs. Saddlebacks, big booty bitches riding on the back. 60 in the bag, motherfucker, can you buy that?
Cruise control, this is how I go on the road. Cruise control, ballin' everywhere that we go.
This is something you can ride to, vibe to. When you ride through Southern California, you'll get hit up in the drive to respect it. We connected, lame shit ejected. I'm ballin', hoes keep calling from here to Texas. In a coupe de ville with my big homie chill. Got Dana's on the wheels for Eve back and get peeled. I'm on that, black wave caps and Raider hats. Looking like I'm a part of NWA camp. But I am no, since a kid playing in the sand. I'm ready, it's in my DNA, that's who I am. Day one, since day one, been on one. Born from the land where the ocean meets the sun. Where either you gon' need a rep or a gun, but you ain't got none, so I suggest you run. Hub City in a thorn, we drippin' and Ralph Lauren. And a nigga been a player since the day I was born. Illa killer cackalacks, 647s to them Lincolns and them Cadillacs. Saddlebacks, big booty bitches riding on the back. 60 in the bag, motherfucker, can you buy that?
Cruise control, this is how I go on the road. Cruise control, we're ballin' everywhere that we go.
Illa killer cackalack, 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 cackalack.
straight to the block, to the hood, to a spot, cocaine, to a rock, deuce, deuce, in a sock. Every dollar closer to a drop, every drop is closer to a cop, every cop is closer to a cell. Hit the cell, your ticket right to hell. No job, no bail, no fam, no mail. New statistics, another nigga fail. Go from pussy to a prison tail. Fuck that, I quit a lot my head. Shit my music off like I'm a stead. Turn it up and hear the ghetto players. Live righteous nigga like my brother said. King Tut, Martin Luther, Malcolm X, but I'm a shooter. Top rhyming knowledge for the noodle. Finally getting praise, yeah, kudos. Doing bad, still up in need. Connect, said it's something up his sleeve. Said I'd rather bust off some keys. Yeah, nigga, birds and the bees. Birds and the bees. Birds and the bees. Wanna do a song, but it's hard to carry on. And my daughter hungry sitting home. And my girl, she says she feel alone. I can tell it's over in the tone. Only time I call is for a loan. She be stretching, spread the breath and all his word. Every time a little nigga gone. Stay strong for the future. Stick together, yeah, suture. Get a couple whips, yeah, kunta. Schoolboy, but gangster with the tutors. Say the money be the root of evil. Look around, see what it do to people. Veins, lethal, heroin, use PCP and check their body with a needle. Lord help us, swear to God. Dope dealers, get a job. Keep it real, this shit ain't really cool. Being in it, still you ain't alive. Niggas kick the short over cheese. Let it help the devil do a deed. So I'd rather bust off the keys. Yeah, nigga, birds and the bees. Birds and the bees. Birds and the bees. Birds and the bees. Tired of the same old shit, niggas, they faking it. Niggas out here living foul, better yet, they flagrant. Kick these niggas right about the gang, get these niggas right about my lane. I just wanna do this fucking music, boy, and leave this dope alone and count my change.
Q, I wanna see you do your thing. Entertainment business, living limelight. Hop on every track and move them trains. Sure, these motherfuckers that you been tight. Then ain't ever been as evident. You intelligent, but you can't escape that life. And for you, my nigga, I would sacrifice myself to make it just to see you hold the mic and hit the stage and rock the set. But it's all the change when you from the set. Won't you think about that nigga, life or death? Life or crack, I like to hang it by the neck. Do you wanna see the boys in jets? Or you wanna see them runway jets? Fly to Singapore, one way that. Tell the pilot we got stacks on deck.
Swear to God, it's hard out here for a young black man to live. If you don't do it for yourself, then please do it for your kid.
My nigga, won't you tell Michelle I love your daughter? Please don't let her grow up life without a father. Look at what you bought her, money couldn't buy. All she need is love, put the shit aside. At the same time, know they gotta eat. Know you gotta hustle, make ends meet. Gotta make time, gotta get a grind, gotta push the line. HGC, no AC, got the black hat, you keep running, cops say freeze. Blue pill, red pill, choose now.
Birds or the bees, birds or the bees, birds or the bees. Tired of the same old shit, niggas, they faking it. Niggas out here living foul, better yet, they flagrant. Get these niggas right about the game, get these niggas right about my lane. I just wanna do this fucking music, go and leave this dump alone and count my change. Count my change, count my change.
Tune in at episode 450 of Off the Cuff Radio. I am your host, King Eric the Media Assassin, and this show is sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, Jesse's Boutique, Core Financial, Fleetwood and the Cot Pickers, and Screwball Radio. My host, T-Max with the Facts, is building.
What it do, y'all. Friday night fantasticness, off the cuff in the building. Shout out to our co-host, the Spirit, a lot of Sandman, Lady Chinchilla. And before we start tonight, we want to dedicate this show to another one of our lost soldiers, one of the OGs, you know, one of the most respected spitters, Slim 400. Rest in peace. We miss you. We love you. You know, you brought a lot to the game. And we wanted to acknowledge your legacy in terms of all the stuff you did, you know, of course, with Yowda, of course, the mechanics, you know, everybody, you know, YG. Yeah, man. So we want to start that off right, showing the proper respect.
Yes, sir, man.
And now that we've, you know, of course, sent that, you know, we have one of the most tremendously talented, one of the most consummately professional creator of California classics. This individual right here for years has been putting it down in terms of creating beats that are so smooth that you would think silk was on it. Matter of fact, this is what silk wears when they want to get fly. Shout out to Derek CPT for this connection. This man right here is, you know, the epitome of musicianship in every word. And we are so blessed, so fortunate, so humble to have him on tonight. Representing Hawthorne, California, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the main one, producer, Day One. What it do, man? Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hey, what's up, fellas? What's up, man? What's going on? I'm happy to be here, man. Thank y'all for having me.
Thank you for coming on, man. Great to have you with
us. Thank you, man. Yeah. Appreciate you.
Of course. No problem, man. Appreciate y'all.
Yeah, man. Day, you are definitely one of the smoothest creators out there in Cali in terms of doing what you do, man. It was only right we bring you on. Mm. And the tradition of what we do with this show in terms of always showing appreciation, respect, giving the bouquets of all types of variety to letting, you know, all our soldiers in the game, male and female, known and unknown, signed and unsigned alike, letting them know how much we appreciate what y'all bring to the culture. It's great to have you with us. I guess we're going to get right into it, man. Tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, how you started on this journey, where you're from, you know.
Okay. Well, my music journey starts as a child. You know, I used to be a kid running around the house dancing and singing to Michael Jackson and stuff. My mom would always throw it on and make me dance for company, you know what I mean? Shit like that. Like, I was always kind of super into music since I was a child. Then as I got older, you know, I kind of got really into music when I realized that I could make it from scratch. Just from hearing something that I heard on the radio, I could mimic that, you know, and make something pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing I knew, man, I just wanted to go with music full-fledged. And then I convinced my mom to buy me a beat machine and some studio equipment, and she did it, and I just went in, and I just never stopped.
Now, your beginnings.
Hey, I was going to say, too, that, you know, you brought up Mike as an influence, man. Like, he's an influence to probably much everybody out here that's probably still doing it. Now, you know, an out there question, man, like, what is the coldest Mike album between Off the Wall and Thriller? With you being a producer, I'm curious to hear that.
Thriller.
Okay.
Thriller, in my personal opinion, you know what I mean? That's just my personal opinion. I love both albums. I love Off the Wall, but there are definitely songs on Off the Wall I'm going to skip. On Thriller, I think is one record I'm going to skip.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at it, Day, because your history is very, you know, diversified in terms of, you know, your beginnings, you know, from when you were, you know, coming into this world. You were up in Northern California from Ukiah, you know, before y'all came to Compton and then ultimately settled in Hawthorne. So you from, you know, from the soil that you, you know, that you came up from, man, you know, you're, you know, the atmosphere that you soaked up for the audio in terms of influences, obviously you would have three elements of it that would really contribute and help you evolve and craft your sound. Now, when you speak on it from a level of, like King said about the, you know, Off the Wall versus Thriller, and you talk about Thriller because this was, because I believe Off the Wall was the album, of course, that Quincy Jones produced. And for a lot of people who think that was Michael's first album, no, that wasn't. Off the Wall was like his fifth album. But, of course, that was like the album that really showed him becoming mature in terms of really beginning to where Off the Wall was his coming of age declaration of independence, showing I'm the adult Mike. Thriller undoubtedly was the album that announced him as a megastar to the world. What do you think about Thriller? Yes, what do you think about Thriller that made it so resonant even to this day, almost 30, well, actually almost 40 years later, actually, in reference to why is it so influential, impactful, and, you know, why does the legacy of it carry the longevity that it does?
I think in my personal opinion, in comparing the two albums, now let me say this. Off the Wall has my favorite Michael Jackson song of all times on it, but I still think that Thriller is like his magnum opus. Like,
great.
And I say that because I feel like Off the Wall to me was him still trying to prove something about the groove. I feel like it was more about the groove than the funk, and I just feel like with Off the Wall he was trying to prove something. I feel like with Thriller, he was just doing what he wanted to do. Like, I just feel like he wanted to do. I feel like he did everything that he wanted to, and he wasn't trying to prove nothing to nobody. I love both albums, but I just feel like creatively, Thriller was like a place where he like hit a patch, and he just did stuff that he wanted to do, regardless of what anybody thought. And I feel like that is the edge that makes it greater. You know, like when you talk about him coming up with the. You know, this dude made a Halloween song.
Yeah.
like, really think about that. Like, and he wanted to
Vincent
do it on
Price.
His own recognition. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, he wanted to do that on his own. Like, and then he wanted to shoot the video a certain way. Like, I felt like with that album, he just did everything he wanted to do his way. I felt like that was his first time being able to be like, this is how I want to do this. And, you know what I mean? I don't care who don't like it or who does. You know, it's just that Thriller just has that huge commercial success because he had really big records, really, really big records on that album back to back. And he was fusing. I feel like he was fusing more things at the time that wasn't being fused. You know what I mean? Like he was fusing rock with what he was doing. And he was fusing different elements. It wasn't just about the funk. And that's why I feel like it's a better album.
Yeah, because, you know, then you can tell by then he had the package now. I mean, you know, you see the trademark jacket, you see the Jerry Curl, and the mobile.
The marketing was like next level. Yeah.
Yeah.
He came back with that because off the wall, he was afroed out.
Yeah, and when you look at a day during that time, when you look at the 80s of that era, because it was released in 1983, you know, the album, when you listen to it, is the epitomes of 80s pop, rock, and soul fused together. When you look at how that album was crafted, you would think that, you know, that they went into that meeting in terms of, okay, because you got to think about it during this time in the 80s where you have, you know, of course, you had that other legend at the time, Prince. You know, who was a few years in his career as well. Of course, that's Cyndi Lauper, you know, Van Halen, the band, who, for incidentally, for people that all may or may not already know, Eddie Van Halen, rest in peace, was the one to play the guitar on Beat It.
On Beat It,
you know, yes, sir. And I believe, you know what I mean, but when you look at the jams of it, like, you know, songs like, you know, PYT, I mean, Thriller, Don't Stop, you know, it's just something that, it's Mike becoming, you know, you're seeing Michael just become more than an artist, like King said. This man became a fashion icon, from the sequin glove to the jacket to the moonwalk, of course, when he debuted on Motown 25, you know, when they gave him his solo. You know, I mean, this man basically would, in one fell swoop, define not only, you know, black culture in a sense, but music culture in general of this is how
a
superstar is supposed to be.
He like laid the groundwork and made the path, you know what I'm saying? Like, Michael was just so influential in so many people for so many different reasons. It's not, and what's great about Michael Jackson is that his influence isn't always the same thing. You know, some people are influenced because he danced. Some people are influenced because he wrote and produced his music. Some people are influenced because he sung. Some people are influenced. You know what I mean? There's always something. And that embodiment, like, he embodied a pop star in full capacity. You know what I mean? From top to bottom, all the way around. He just embodied it. And, you know, for me being someone that's coming up trying to do music and looking at, you know, how should I do music the right way, how can I not look at Michael Jackson? And how can I not, you know what I mean? I can't discredit that. And no fact.
Yeah. And editors know. And editors know, because we always on this show want to be as accurate as possible. It was released in 1982, but it really started, you know, of course, 83 is when it really, really,
dropped.
Yeah, November 30th, 82. You know, but when you look at songs like, you know, I mean, you know, we know this show is going to be great. We're starting off talking about Mike. It don't get no greater than that. But when you get songs like Wanna Be Starting Something, I mean, you know, when you look at The Girl Is Mine, you know, it's like these are classics that are timeless. Now, you as a producer, when you look at how you are crafting music, as you started getting into it from a young age, you know, from you were in a talent show when you were young, you know, so your passion for performing was apparent at a young age in terms of, is from that passion and you really becoming part of the, you know, really wanting to make this a career. Because we got a lot to get to, because your history is deep. It is like really, really, really deep.
Let them know.
Yeah, so we're going to start from the perspective of once you really started getting an understanding in terms of you were, what were those early years like in terms of you, like, really crafting your sound and everything? Because you were also in a group before that, and you were also signed to a label before that. So tell us in that sequence about how all of this went over those, you know, roughly 5 to 10 years of you really kind of getting your feet into it.
Yeah, paying my 10,000 hours. I started off as a solo guy, just trying to get into music, writing poetry and writing raps and doing talent shows on my own. And then got into high school, ended up meeting a couple of friends that were just my friends at first, you know, at school. And the next thing I knew, you know, one day we all end up like freestyle rapping at a football game. And then the next thing you know, we were like, man, we should do some music together. Everybody wants to do music, you know, and that's how the group started. So in starting that group in high school, we just got good at trying to figure out how to create music. So around this time, I was 16, 17 years old. There used to be a studio in my city in Hawthorne called The Black Hole, ran by my boy King McCloud. And King McCloud is responsible for recording everything from J.O. Felony and DMX, What You Want to Do With It, to Bone Thugs and Harmony's first two albums. Eazy-E used to be up there all the time. So I would go up to the studio up there just to try to hang out and stick around the spot to learn how a studio operated and what goes on in the studio. You know what I'm saying? I would be up in there. I would run into Eazy-E. You know, I would run into Bone Thugs. I would run into J.O. Felony at a young age. And, just
oh, man, you said J.O. Felony. Okay. Shout out San Diego.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, shout out San Diego, my guy, J.O. I was meeting these guys at 17 years old just because I wanted to be in the studio. I was just a studio rat, you know what I mean? Like, as long as my mom knew I wasn't in the streets, running the streets, I was in the studio, she was happy, you know what I'm saying? So I spent a lot of my time just in the studio trying to figure out, you know, how a studio operates and what goes on in the studio. So next thing I knew, from there, started making music with my group, and then first semester of college, we ended up getting our first independent record deal. With a company called Individual Records and Universal. And then from that point on, the record label just kind of threw me in the studio and was like, hey, figure out how to make beats. And that's what I did. I started making beats and started producing. Because there would become times while I'm in the studio session and I'm trying to tell the producer we're working with how to produce the song I want to hear, but he couldn't hear it how it heard in my head. So then my friends were just like, why don't you try to make the beat? You know what I'm saying? Like, why don't you just try it? And I was like, man, I don't know how to work this equipment. You know, I don't know how to work this stuff. They're like, just figure it out. You know what I'm saying? If he know how to do it, you can know how to do it. Like, and it was that simple. Once they said it to me, it was like, you know what? I can figure it out. And so I did. Then I got good at it. Then after getting good at making beats, I started selling beats, making money. And then the label was paying me double time for being an artist. And then they were paying me for my production work I was doing with other artists on the label. So then that's when it made me go, okay, maybe I need to focus a little more on this producing stuff, because this is making me money. You know what I'm saying? More than just being a rapper.
Yeah. Now, from that perspective, Day, because in terms of where your history began, I mean, because, of course, you know, when you were in a talent show, you did your own rendition of Player's Ball using Outkast beat and writing your own lyrics to that as well. And, of course, with your group, you had a song called No One, you know, with an artist, with your, you know, by a rapper by the name of Noni Spitz. So by this time, you were already very well entrenched in terms of understanding the musical game. And, of course, this is all before you actually start getting into the beats as well. Now, I noticed with the Akai, you know, which was one of your tools, you know, that you learned.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, and, of course, shout out to the Bay Area legend, the Oakland Outstanding, the Godfather himself, or the badass Bay on the production, Easki. You know, that's one of his joints he likes to use a lot.
That's my guy.
Yeah,
that's
man.
My guy.
Shout
my
out
OG
to
right
Infrared.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Infrared Music Group, him and CMT.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, man.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, what was it like in terms of learning? Because was pretty much analog your thing, or were you kind of transitioning into the digital during that time as you began to learn?
Yeah. What's crazy is me coming into making music, I pretty much so far have recorded on every form of music, you know what I mean, that you can record on. When I started, everything was analog. But as I started getting into music, simultaneously, as I was first getting into music, music was also changing, going digital. So I've seen the transition from going from reel to reel, going straight from there, going straight to ADATs, going from ADATs to going from ADATs to hard drives, it was just a hard drive mainframe, and then going from mainframe straight to Pro Tools. So I pretty much have recorded on every version of music to record on, you know what I mean, in existence. And that's not to say that I'm better than somebody else or anything like that, but my journey just took me through those times of which, you know, the industry was transitioning and everything was getting more simplified as far as how to record so we can, you know, record more affordably for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, coming up around those tools and those elements, they influence my music on different levels for different reasons. You know, I understand how the MPC works, so, you know, dealing with the MPC and dealing with the SP-1200, I understand how they work. And then you got something like Fruity Loops that comes where now we can record into it and also create something simultaneously within the same realm in that program as opposed to going from analog straight to digital. But in my personal opinion, analog just still has this warm feel that you can't get nowhere else. It's just what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think from that perspective, what you said, Dave, because when you're looking at analog, you know, especially, you know, the era King and myself, you know, came up in, you know, us being older, we pretty much, it just has, like you said, that warmth. It just has that certain indescribable, indelible it that, you know, us really embodies the grit of it. You know, while digital is good for clarity and sonics, there is just a down-home feeling of analog where it's just more the acoustics of it, the aesthetics of the audio, the overall, the visceral, just that visceral embrace you get from to your ears from listening is just an indescribable feeling.
Right.
Now, once you're getting into the production side, you're also having to learn the business as well, and this also coincides with a perfect segue because one of the guys that you learned the business from is one of our guests that we had on the other week, Sir Jinx. Tell us about that.
That's my guy. Hey, man, that's my OG right there. That's my mentor, man. Sir Jinx put me up under his wing. Sir Jinx put me up under his wing after he heard my guy, Noni Spitz, freestyle in a freestyle battle, and he took me up under his wing when he brought me to his house as his producer. Like, hey, if you want to work with me on some rap shit, you got to meet my producer. And it was me. So he brought me over to the house. And I first sat down with Sir Jinx, and Sir Jinx was like, play me some of your music. Let me hear something. And so I played him some joints. I played him some songs, you know, trying to impress him. And he wasn't impressed. He acted like he wasn't impressed. He was like, oh, okay, that's cool. Yeah, whatever. All right, so, yeah, what you doing tomorrow? Come back through here tomorrow, and I'm going to teach you how to make your drums beefier and show you about stacking sounds and show you how to make, you know, certain elements, but I didn't know you know what I mean, in that same breath, that he actually was impressed by me. He just didn't want to show it to me. He didn't tell me until years later, like, man, I couldn't tell you that, you know, when I first met you, that I would have blew your head up.
Right.
He's like, but you know, when you first came to my house, I was hella impressed. Like, God damn, who is this kid? Like, he's playing, oh, my Lord, who is it? But he played it so cool. He was just like, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, first voter, yeah, go to the next one. And I was like, damn, he didn't even like it. I couldn't tell if he liked it or nothing.
Look, that's hella restraint for holding it back for a year. And this is from a guy who produced Cube's first four albums.
So, you know, the pressure was on me to impress him. I'm like, okay, I got to impress him. You know, Ice Cube, this Dr. Dre little cousin. Oh, okay, let me play him, you know, let me play him some records. Let me play him some of my best works. And he was just like, you know. But, you know, he told me, you know, years later, like, you know, I actually was really impressed. But me being mentored with him was like, him mentoring me was like one of the greatest things that could have happened to my career, because it taught me so much about the business, the industry, the game. You know, he got me around celebrities early on, young, working with people, so I was building relationships even at a time when I wasn't ready, you know what I mean? And I thank him for that, because without him, you know, a lot of doors that were open, you know, were open because of the favoritism that he had with certain people. And that helped me in my career to where I could be sitting here today, you know what I mean, with you. And you guys are looking at all the work that I've done, like, man. But a lot of that is attributed to him mentoring me and taking me up under his wing at an early age.
Now,
that's the type of game right there to soak up somebody. That's a hell of a mentor to have. You know, this guy being a pivotal part of this culture. I mean, I'm talking about, he had one of the craziest runs I've ever seen. I mean, he's talking about Cube, records, rap record.
Yep. Yo, the dude produced No Vaseline. Like, that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. And when you think about it, man, I mean, of course, you know, because we had Jinx on, you know, because my favorite rapper of all time is Kool G Rap. The work that he did on Live and Let Die.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My
yes.
God. I mean, look, that album came out in 1992, and when you listen, it's like, it's one thing about when you're listening to G-Rap's lyrics, because basically it's the cinematography on wax, you know, it's like he's painting a big mural of a movie through the production, but when you listen to songs like On the Run from the beginning, and I mean, you know, that them crazy samples, I mean, and then of course, you know, Great Train Robbery, I mean, Operation CB, favorite track, and I mean, Edge of Sanity is my favorite track up there. I mean, you know, the way, you know, for those, because we're not going to give up the game in terms of some of those samples that he used, because we all know, if you know your music, you know what he used up there. But when you listen to how he flips it, you know, it's crazy, and, you know, what was it, you know, when he's taking you under his wing, Dave, so what is it like, because this is around maybe 2008, 2009, so we're seeing, like, this new generation of the West Coast with the legends and the new talent. Yeah, exactly. What was it, who were some of the people that you saw along the way on that journey, like, before they became big?
I'm just saying, I'm thinking back, like, man, that journey was crazy, because at that time, you know, there was a rift. There was a rift out here in the coast between a lot of the young artists and a lot of the OG artists that were out here holding it down, because, you know, they felt like, and I guess I'm a part of that too, because, you know, we had started this whole thing called the New West Movement, where we were like, well, we the New West Coast artists. And a lot of our OG cats out here got offended by us calling ourselves new. But it was like, but we are new, and so that was our stance, like, but we are new, and they're, like, feeling disrespected that we're, like, we're calling them old, and it wasn't that, it's just that we were just saying these are new, fresh faces, you know, and so in that time of seeing that journey, you know, we had a little chitlin circuit out here where all the artists that were doing their thing would start bubbling, the streets would start talking. Also around this time, the internet was super popping, so the internet was getting songs and music to fans before these record labels could, you know, and the record labels couldn't keep up. They couldn't figure it out. So on that journey around that time, I'm meeting J-Rock, I'm meeting Kendrick Lamar, I'm meeting Nipsey Hussle, I'm meeting Glasses Malone, I'm meeting Bishop Lamont.
I'm eating Strong Arm Steady. I'm eating just all these
crazy
phenomenal artists, you know what I mean, that are still still now holding it down to this day, you know what I'm saying, doing their stuff. And, you know, everyone's on this whole little chilling circuit doing shows together, rocking out, and trying to just take their career to the next level, dealing with radio and the politics of radio at a young age. We don't understand how radio works. It was just a lot going on at that time. But, you know, I can never change what we did, because what we did, you know, brought us to where we are today. So it's actually pretty dope.
And when you look at that movement, Day, because when you say, because the people, some of them, you know, you mentioned, you know, of course, Shot of Glass Malone, Watts, Stand Up, you know, we had him on the show a couple years back. Shout out to Strong Arm Steady, of course, Mitchie Slick down in Lincoln Park, 619.
Hey,
shout
out to DJ, hold on, we got a guest on the line right quick. He want to holler at Day One right here.
Okay,
right.
Let's bring him in.
Three one zero.
Is that me?
310.
Yeah, it's you. Yeah.
Hey, what's up with it, man? It's D. What's up with y'all, man? I'm listening to y'all interview.
What's going on,
D?
Oh,
man.
D,
we got that. We got 2 310s too, man. We got I think we got Chili Chill on the line.
Okay, Chill.
Yeah,
what do you do?
What's cracking with you? Off the cuff radio. Give Day One his props. You know what I'm saying?
Oh man, I appreciate you, my dude. Thank you, my G. Damn.
That's what's up. Let me chill that day.
Man, I'm gonna head up to the lab too and catch you up there too. I just been running.
Oh man, I'm here right now.
For sure.
Yeah, I'm up here right now. What up, Chill?
Shit, not too much, man. Just posted on this West Coast throwing up W's.
Man. Come on, man. See, I love that, man. I appreciate you, man, for sure. 100%. That means a lot.
Call in to give props. What props is due.
Oh, my
man,
God.
Man, Chill. Yo, we appreciate this, man. Thank you.
It's all good, man. You know, us being all, West Coast, we got to support each other, and at the same time,
we got
off the cuff radio all day. You know what I'm saying? So we all fam.
Yep.
We all linked in and going to stay linked in.
Yes,
absolutely.
Already, man. Dope. We definitely appreciate you, man. I mean, as always, we always build it on the daily because, you know, we got to stay current with what's going on with the world, man. But to have you on to chop it up with us, breathe, it's a beautiful thing, man. You keep doing your thing, brother.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Man, love you, Chili Chill. Good looking, bro.
Yeah, love you too, bro. Love you too. Shit, I'm going to jump off, but I'm going to keep listening, though.
Okay, for sure.
All right, for sure.
D, you still on with us?
For sure, man.
Okay, word. Yeah, man. You know, one thing about it, you know, D&D, when y'all look at that West Coast movement during that time, because we got to think back to, like, all the artists, like, you know, because, of course, Game, you know, was, you know, dropped the documentary in 2005. Kendrick, you know, still wouldn't come until years later, you know, with his debut Section 80, but before then he had his mixtape, you know, Youngest Head Nigga in Charge. For our hip-hop heads out there who want to grill, find that if you're not in California.
Go find it,
man.
I mean, you know, we're talking about Nipsey, you know, with Blue Laces, you know, the Bullets Ain't Got No Name mixtapes. You know, this is like the burgeoning, like, new level. J-Rock coming out of Wash, you know, Nick, you know what I'm saying? Shout out Nick of the Gardens, you know, because you did work on his debut as well, Follow Me Home.
They worked on his debut, We had Dom Kennedy.
Yeah.
We had it was so many acts. We had Casey Veggies. I met Casey Veggies at a studio. He was 16 years old at a studio with us. You know what I'm saying? Like, so all this is happening all at the same time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy. And at that time, you know, LA cats were getting deals out here, so a lot of cats from other areas started coming here too. So, you know, we had We had all the homies from the Bay coming down because the Bay Area is coming down. The hyphy movement was starting. Don't forget the hyphy movement with Rick Rock and
kind of went to it.
All this surge is just happening at the same time. So the energy was just this magnetic energy was just flowing, and everyone was getting on, collaborating, doing records with other people, and you know what I'm saying. So it was just a good time on the coast. Everyone's making their sound, getting to it.
Yeah. And one thing about it, man, when you think about that time, because you're seeing all of these artists, I mean, this is going back like 10, 12 years. So we're looking, you know, at Kendrick and J-Rock. If I got my stats right, I think Kendrick has won his Grammy, and, you know, of course, J-Rock won his. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And we haven't even gotten to SZA yet because we haven't even gotten to her yet because you did. This is why I'm telling everybody from the beginning, we said this, your history is long distinguished and documented, man.
Dude,
you're like working with all of these individuals and meeting them, and these people are, you know, now the it factor. These are the people that are like, you know, what did you learn from that journey? Because like any producer, it takes time to get in, you know, and you know, between those selling beats, I remember, I have a 2001 issue of the Source magazine. I think this was the one with Busta Rhymes on the cover. It was like, he was coming out the swamp and he was covered in mud. And there was, you know, this guy, I think you may have heard of him. Acts a little nutty as hell sometimes, but the motherfucker is just a genius. You know, born in Atlanta but raised in Chicago. You know, I think his name is, you know, Kanye West, I believe.
Right.
You know,
right.
So Kanye, they were talking about, this is like when Kanye's were starting because, you know, of course, he had been known primarily working, you know, Infamous Syndicate, Changing the Game album. Anyway, as he goes on, this is like after he does Jay's Blueprint album, this is when he starts getting known. And they were talking about how back in the day he was, because this is back in 2001, so they were talking about, you know, those, so they were like talking about after what happened with his production in terms of like he was selling beats for like maybe $600-$700, maybe a little less.
Yeah.
But they were like, he knows those, because after the Blueprint, that kicked the door down for him. And they're like, oh, if you want to buy a Kanye beat today, it's going to run you about 50 G's. Now, this was in 2001.
Right.
So what is it like for a producer in terms of that grind? Because tell us about your first big placement that came with the Dogfather himself. What was that trek like to getting that?
The trek for me was I always have been a fan of Snoop. I was always a fan of Snoop Dogg since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I think the first album I bought with my own money, I take that back. Doggy Style album, I begged my mom to make her buy that album for me. You know what I'm saying? I begged it. I was probably 10. I was like 10 years old. Like, I'm gonna buy this album. You know what I'm saying? Like, buy this album for me, or whatever. And she wouldn't buy it. No, maybe I was 11 or 12. She wouldn't buy it. But then she broke down and went and bought it. But she didn't know what she was buying. It looked like a cartoon on the front. She was like, okay, what are you doing? Cartoon album, whatever. You know what I'm saying? And then I played it in the car on the way home. She was like, what is this even made me buy you? I say that to say I've been a fan of Snoop since I was young. You know what I'm saying? And I always wanted to work with Dog. I was just trying to figure out a way to work with him. And, you know, at the time, it wasn't so easy just to get a hold of Snoop Dogg. You know what I mean? It just wasn't easy. So my theory was I knew a lot of different people that were around him that were accessible to me. So I started working with those cats. You know what I mean? So I could try to work my way up to getting to him. And, you know, I've been working with people around Snoop for years. You know what I'm saying? Like, the Goldilocks and Butch Cassidy's and E. White and just people like around Snoop, you know what I'm saying, but not him himself. So I actually hit the studio with Butch Cassidy. We're working on his album. I was working on Butch Cassidy's album, and Butch Cassidy ended up taking a record to Snoop and played him one of the songs, and Snoop was like, let me get on that. and he jumped on the record, and it was my beat. It was my production. So Butch came back, and he didn't tell me. He just, like, played me the song with his verse on it, and I was like, what? Like, what? And, you know, next thing I knew, we got a phone call, and Snoop was like, he wanted to use it on his album. So it was like, oh, shit. Okay, cool. So, you know, we did all the paperwork and stuff, and that was like my first official major placement. And I say that because my first major placement came with Little Flip from Houston. I had a record with Little Flip on his album that he did when he was signed to Sony, but that album never officially came out. So
got you.
You know what I mean? It was like bittersweet. Like, dang, I did the record and he won it on the album, and then like the album don't come out. You know what I mean? He got dropped or shelved or whatever happened. I don't know, but. So Snoop actually gave me my first major placement in the game.
Now,
and when I first met Snoop, when I first met him, we met at like an event, and I walked up to him and I told him who I was, but he already knew who I was. Like, oh, I know who you are. Like, man, your beats is harder than a motherfucker, man. Like this and that. He was like, man, I was sitting around getting jealous. Like, how come I ain't getting no beats? Like, how are these other dudes getting beats from this dude? Who's this day one guy, and I ain't getting no beats? How come I ain't getting no beats? I'm Snoop. You know what I mean? I just laughed at him because that means, you know what I mean? I just laughed, and it was like, damn, my theory worked. Okay. You know what I'm saying? I was just like, let me work with everybody around him, you know, because I knew Corrupt because of 13. So I knew Corrupt. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I started knowing all these people, and so I'm doing songs with all these people, and they're probably going back playing him the songs we're doing, and he's like, who's giving all these beats? And it was me.
Man, I mean, but, you know, people got to understand this, you know, and King and myself, you know, us doing this show from an independent scale, you know, we understand that as the work ethic that goes into this from a perspective of hustling and moving, you know, because, you know, there's nothing that's going to replace your own motivation,
drive.
The marathon.
Yeah.
Exactly, that drive, because you got it, not only having a drive, but the direction of knowing which way you want to go. When you look at LA in general, because when you look at all the hoods, you know, when we look at Athens Park, when we look at, you know, Inglewood, you know, when we look, Crenshaw and Slauson, when we look at Brazil, you know, when we look at, you know, Denver Lane, I mean, when we look, you know, all
right.
These different places, Compton Boulevard, Rosecrans, Central, you know, 97th, you know, you got everybody from different hoods. You got Avalon, you know, it's just so many, you know, and you got so many heads out there trying to get on in the game, trying to do their thing. The movement you all have had from a grassroots level is unbelievable. What is it about, you know, California in general, from L.A. to the Bay, down to Sandy, you know, all over, that y'all just have this unmitigated, uninterrupted, unfathomable, unquestionable, undeniable, and unconquerable hustle and will and drive to succeed?
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of that has to do with our environment. So I feel like to say, environment also including not just saying environment like hoods or neighborhoods, but also including like our weather. I feel like our weather plays a huge role into our music as well, because, you know, we get a lot of sunlight, a lot of sunshine. Sunlight, sunlight is something that's uncomparable to anything else. Sunlight can brighten your day, you know what I'm saying, if anything. And although LA is political, you know, super political out here, and a lot of politics that go into making music out here, but at the end of the day, the sound that we resonate with, that funk, that soul, that funk, that rhythm, combined with our weather, it just makes for a suitable understanding where everybody understands, you know, what the end goal is, and that's to make something that everybody can have fun with, play at the barbecue. That's always been, you know what I'm saying, one of our goals. So I feel like that plays a huge part. But in terms of, like, getting out of our situations and making it better is, you know, this is a melting pot. L.A. is a melting pot of, like, everyone that wants to be successful comes here. So we see it firsthand how close you can be. You know what I mean? Like, we get to witness it firsthand. And then, you know, L.A. is big, but it's also small at the same time. So everybody knows someone. Everybody knows someone that knows someone that made it. And that's, you know what I mean? That's our reality. Our reality is never really like it's far away because we've seen it too often. All you need is your opportunity.
Yeah.
And when your opportunity comes, when your opportunity comes, just be ready to cash in on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, but when you look at a lot of heads that come out of there, man, I mean, you know, Watts, you know, I mean, we look at Glasses and J-Rock come out of Watts. You know, when you look at legendary DJ Quick, you know, representing TTP, you know, Treetop, you know, when you look at, I mean, when you look at, you know, Joe Moses, shout out, you know, 5-4, you know, Van Ness.
Man, shout
you know
out,
I mean? When
man,
you look at
my
big,
guys,
yeah. Then Slim,
my
we can't forget Slim.
Man.
Slim
yeah, man.
400,
man.
Man.
That's,
I mean,
that's my dude.
Slim, you know, the first time I heard Slim, y'all, and shout out to our boys up in the Bay, the town, the outstanding Oakland, of course, Kenny Tweed and Four Racks, known as the Mechanics. The first time I heard Slim was on a joint called Hit and Run with Mozzie and Jay Stylin'. And, you know, I mean, that, Slim was just slick with it on the words, man. I mean, it was like this dude, you just saw something with him that was just different in terms of how he rhymed. It's like,
yeah.
He had a very, you know, staccato style, but by the same token, he could slow it down as well. And, of course, we can't forget our man out in Las Vegas, Yowda, because he did a song with him called It Don't Pay. You know, and, I mean, this dude was just an unbelievable. What was it like in terms of watching Slim's rise out there, you know, to really become what he became?
It was dope. It was dope to see it transition, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? From like the ground up and the groundwork of being in someone else's shadow, but yet you still your own man. You know what I mean? And Slim was always one of those dudes that was always 100, and he always wanted to work. You know what I mean? I remember one time he came to my studio. He left like an event, came to my studio. I've been working all day. He got to my studio. I think they got there to my studio about 2:30 at night. He was ready to record right then. I said, man, I'm about to go home, man. I'm tired. He was ready to go. You know what I'm saying? He was just always that dude that was always just like, throw the beat on. Let's go. What are we doing? Throw it up. You know what I mean? And, you know, just, I'll never forget, you know, just chilling, hanging out with him. And, you know, we shot a video like 2 years ago with him and my boy Rector from Paris. We ended up shooting a video downtown that I like co-directed with him in the video.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, you know, Slim's always been that dude that's always just been fun to be around, always laughing and cracking jokes and shit. That's just always, you know, it's always him. It's never a dull time around that dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's always something fun to do around him because he's going to keep your spirits up. So, you know, it's always good to see the homies doing good. You know what I'm saying? On every level. You know what I mean? Seeing them go on tour with YG and them doing their run while they were on tour, doing their campaign and him pushing his new music, and he was always one of those artists that always wanted to, you know, help somebody that he thought was dope. If he thought you was dope, he was going to work with you, and that's just who Slim was.
Yeah, man, and I mean, it's one thing about it because, you know, when you look at what it means, when you got legends that come out of L.A., you know, like Baron Davis, you know, Keyshawn Johnson, you know, Jeff Trepanier. Yes, I said Jeff Trepanier. For those that have never saw him play at USC when he was there, that boy was the baddest dunker you have ever seen. Jeff
took it back without one.
Ridiculous. Boy. Of course, you know, DeMar DeRozan. Yeah, Tyson Chandler.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, it doesn't just stop with the music. It's like you got athletes. You know, of course, Venus and Serena Williams. You know, of course, we get back to the rappers. You know, we can't forget Big June, you know, representing June the 1, representing 109.
Yep.
You know, of course, Figueroa. Can't forget about Fig Newton. You know what I'm saying? Can't forget about those guys.
Right.
You know, so it's like, and then we got to get back to you, Dave, because I have to tell you about the first time I heard a track by you, and it was Mac Lucci, Cali Life. I heard that I was like, I swear I thought I was in Cali, and I'm sitting in school in the library. I'm like, I don't know what this is, but this is heavenly. I love it instantly.
Yo, it was so what the track was to me was the track that he that you did with Snoop and was Bad For Me. That joint there was dope. I had that on
the Bad For Me joint.
I had that on rotation for like almost that whole damn near summer.
Wow. That's impressive, man. That makes me feel good, for real. Like, damn.
Yeah, because
someone listen
he
to
did,
your
like,
stuff, you know what I'm saying?
Videos for it used in hood movies. It was really dope. Like, yep, he did the
video
with society.
He did Menace to Society or whatever, yeah. Yep. Yeah. I remember doing that record with Snoop. I was just sitting in the studio after I finished making the beat or whatever, and I was thinking of who I should send the record to. And when I first finished it, I was like, man, I'm gonna send this to Slum Village. And then my homeboy was in the studio with me. He was like, man, you should send that to Snoop. And I was like, Snoop? I wasn't even thinking about Snoop, bro. I wasn't even thinking about Snoop Dogg. And so I was like, all right, I'll send it to Snoop. So I emailed him. I texted him, and I sent it to him. And then, like, the next day, like, that morning, he, like, hit me in the morning, like, 7 a.m., like, took the email, and he sent me the record back. Like,
oh, wow.
I was like, whoa. Yeah.
I like how he puts that Mary J. Blige course up there. How could I?
And you know what's funny? And I told him too. I was like that week when I sent him that record, I had been listening to that album like all week long. So when he put that chorus on that record, I was just kicking back. Like, and I told him, I said, man, I've been playing her album like all week, and he just laughed. Like, is that right? He's like, that's funny. You know, it's just a coincidence. Like, it just came out like that. And the way he did it was just genius. I love that record. It's one of my favorite records.
Man, I mean, so what is it like once you're really gaining steam in terms of, I mean, because the Doll Father, you know, Snoop is like, you know, almost next year will be 34 years from when he dropped Deep Cover with Dre.
Yeah.
1992, of course. So it would mark 34 years since, you know, Snoop came into our, you know, hip-hop's public consciousness.
Wow.
After you, you know, it's like he's that godfather, that grandfather, that uncle we all love dearly. Snoop, if you're listening, we love you, man, and we're just so thankful that you're still with us. And you just dropped a banging-ass album with the Algorithm.
Right. Yep.
So it's like you're still doing it. After you get on with Snoop Day in terms of getting that cosign, what is it like when all that work starts coming in? Because once again, damn it, we got to get to the Scissor story. Yes, I love Scissor. I tell anybody, Control was a great album, but I will say it on air. If you have not listened to S and C Scissor Run and her EPs before Control, you're not going to understand Control completely. Yes, I have all of them.
You're not gonna. Right, you're not going to get it.
Go ahead.
It was just one of those things, like once that happens and, you know, you get that stamp, you get that majority, you get eyes on you, you get people listening, now you get people trying to tune in, you know, you start getting all kinds of people you didn't think about hitting you up, you know what I'm saying, and, you know, wanting to see what you're working on. So after, I remember shortly after that, I got the call from Jinx, where Jinx was like, hey, man, we're going to the studio working on Detox Records. I said, okay, let's go. You know what I'm saying? So we hit the studio working on Detox Records. We cook up a few joints. We send some over to Dre, try to see what happens. Nothing really happened. We don't really hear nothing. You know, a month goes by or whatever. Next thing I know, Jinx hit me back, and Jinx like, I sent some of the records over to Cube, and Cube want one of the records. He wants the record with J.O. Felony on it. And I was like, wow, okay. So Cube liked the record so much, he laid his verse, put Dub C on it, and it sent it back, and the record was done. So, you know, and this is all the same year. This is a couple months later. So now I get Snoop Dogg in the same year and Ice Cube with J.O. Felony and Dub C all in the same year as my placement. So I'm, like, ecstatic. I'm like, oh, I'm on fire right now. You know what I mean? And, you know, everything just keeps coming. So when Punch and TDE came to me and they were like, hey, man, Dave, we got this girl. We think we want to sign her. Her name is Scissor. She's from New York. When she get here, we're going to put you in the studio with her. I was like, all right, cool. Send me some of her songs. Let me listen to her music. See what she's about. You know what I mean? And they were like, all right. So they sent me a couple of records that she had did on See Scissor Run. And I listened to a couple of the songs. I was depicting her style out. Like, okay, let me see what she's about. So when me and her finally met, we officially met. We went to the studio in Glendale. my boy at Treachery Studios. At the time, Crooked Eye was there, and my guy Mickey was there. They let us use the studio space, and we created Child's Play like on the spot. Me and her, we're going through beats. And what I will say about my career is I've learned that it's always good to be ready. So it's always good to have like beats on hand. You know what I mean? Like just when you got downtime, start making beats. If you're a producer and you got downtime, make some beats. Like that's your job. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't know what an artist is gonna like or gravitate to. So just be open-minded of that, and you'll be good. So I play Scissor of the instrumentals for Child's Play, and she goes crazy. Like, oh, that's it. Pull that up. That's the one. I'm doing that. So me and Scissor did like two or three songs that night. We did like three records. The other two I just haven't put out. But she went in the booth, and she just started singing the record, singing the melody, and next thing I knew, the record was done. She came out the booth, we sat and chopped it up, and we were like, all right. So we went back in the studio like a couple times later. Me and Ali went back and forth on the mix, and then they put Chance the Rapper on the record, and then sent it back to me, and then me and Ali mixed it, and then it came out. And that song has been one of my biggest commercial success. Like, a lot of women know me for that record because a lot of girls love that song. And so when they find out that I did it, they're just like, oh, shit, you did one of my favorite songs of all time. You know what I mean? It's just crazy to have those conversations with people that, you know, you just influence their life and don't even know. You know what I mean? Just from doing something that I love. It's such a great feeling. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just grateful.
Now, one thing about it, because, see, we couldn't give away all the surprises because, you know, because you, of course, you did the joint with Dre with Detox. Now, tell Dre that we're begging him. Please drop Detox. We're begging him to do it.
You know what? We might get a treat, though. We might get the whole thing in the new GTA if we play our cards right. That'd be the first video game
right.
I'll buy in 10 years.
Dre talking about he didn't release it because he didn't think it was good enough. I'm like, Dre, your C-minus game is better than most people's A-plus game. Saying that Detox wasn't good enough.
I don't know. I just feel like
it
was a lot of pressure.
If the term perfectionist is
probably
his name right there.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a lot of pressure. You know what I'm saying? You can't please everybody, and you don't want to fall into that realm where you have to please everybody. So I get it. It makes sense. It's just take your time with it. But no, he's always working. Dre doesn't stop working. Like, you know what I'm saying? No matter what's going on, he's always working on something.
For those that don't believe what Day is saying about Dre's work ethic, I have the very first issue of Scratch Magazine, and I'm so blessed that I grabbed all of them before XXL ceased production, because basically that publication is a producer's wet dream when you break, when you read through it. I'm just blessed I was able to get all those issues because, of course, when you're reading about the nuances in terms of the samples, productions, and everything, and Dre, when they did the interview with Dre, When they talking with Dre, I think Dre said the longest he has stayed in the studio was, I believe, I think he said he stayed in there like 73 or 80 hours straight. And Dre was like, look, you're not going to outwork me coming into the studio, but try to keep up.
Wow. That's a true saying. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Going back to that, man, I'm like, if we could get at least a snippet of Detox, we just need something at this point, man. We just need a taste of it, man.
All the people he rumored, and then who we actually had up there, we're like, Dre, come on now. We need that album.
Especially, I don't know if this rumor is true or not, but I don't know, maybe you could clarify it, but I was hearing that he had possibly either Denzel on the intro or Michael Jackson on the intro. I think that was a put up in the... I've been hearing that for years.
I ain't heard that one. It was who on the intro?
Michael Jackson.
Denzel or
Michael
Jackson.
Yeah.
Nah, I never heard that. Whoa, I ain't never heard that one. That's a fade. I did hear R. Kelly intro though. And I'll probably never hear it.
Yeah. Well, yep. given this certain state of Mr. Kelly's personal affairs right now, yeah, we but yeah, man.
Would never come out.
Yeah, but when you look at that situation, it's all good. We good out here. Yeah, but when you look at that situation, man. When you think about what was happening at that time, of course you're working with Dre. You know, you're working.
Right.
Q, tell us about that So Gangsta track off of I Am the West. How did that come about in terms of when Cube, because Cube is a legend in the game, no two ways about
mm-hmm.
it. You know, and this is also a situation when you look at the old guard, you know, and we mean this in all respect. When you look at guys like, of course, Trey D, Goldilocks, Q, Cam, Big Y, you know, Mac 10. You know, all these guys, you know, second to none, Quick. I mean, these are all individuals. You know, of course, Chilly Chill, you know, MCA, you know,
yeah,
Compton's
yeah.
Most, I mean, King T. You're looking at all these
yep.
guys, even producers like Battle Cat, you know what I'm saying, all of them.
Right.
Can't forget E-Rule, you know what I'm saying.
Right.
You know, these are individuals that help lay down the foundation for what you do out there. So for Q, what was it like to be a part of that in terms of adding on to his already luminary
legacy
of legendary? Yes, sir.
To me, that just made me feel like I had arrived. Like, okay, I'm official. Like, it made me feel validated, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, not only did it come through my mentor, Sir Jinx, that felt great in itself. On top of it coming through my mentor, Sir Jinx, it also came from a place of, like, he just liked what he heard, and that's what I liked about it the most, was just like he gravitated to hearing something that he heard, you know, didn't know me off the bat, you know what I'm saying, and just went for it. And I appreciate that chance, like that shot, you know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't even about who made it or how big my name was. It was just about, I like it. I like this record.
Mm-hmm.
I like what it sounds like. I want to rap on that. And to me, that felt good because, you know, it came from a place of me just trying to be creative and make something that I wanted to impress the West Coast with. And him gravitating to it just made it way more realistic. Like, okay, I'll officially arrive. I'm in this industry now. I gotta, you know, stick my feet in and really get to the grit and get to the grind of it and really, you know, make myself a name out here, a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, that just made it more realistic for me. I will say that it definitely heightened that sense, you know what I'm saying? And being that he is who he already is with all his classic albums under his belt and all of his, you know, his rap writing skills. I ain't going to lie. To me, Ice Cube is the greatest first liner in the history of hip-hop music. Like, Ice Cube always comes with the greatest first lines of every verse. You know what I mean? Like, that's just my thing with Cube is, you know, he's someone that takes it serious, and I admire that.
Man, look,
man,
Jay,
that's a point. You know what's dope, what you just said just now is, I ain't even pointed that out myself about Ice Cube. Like, he's the master of opening up a song.
He's the master.
Yeah.
Opens up every track.
Every song, every time, every single time. That's just who he
is. Look, when you listen to
I'm
Wicked, he's like, one, two. I mean, when you listen to Wicked, he's like, one, two, three, and I come with the Wicked style, and you know that I'm from the Wicked crew. Act like you're new, because I got everybody jumping to the voodoo ticket, which is rhymes. I get started, and then we start off with a no bathroom. He's like, God damn, I'm glad y'all set it off. Used to be hard,
every
now you just let it off. Used to be down with the AK. Now I see you with videos of Michel A looking like straight Bozo. That's all coming.
Hey, I got you one right here. The world is mine, nigga. Get back. Don't fuck
get
with
back.
Me.
Come on, bro. Stack the days is rap. Like who starts a verse off like that? Come on, bro. Who starts a verse off with, like, just waking up in the morning, gotta thank God? Like, really think about the shit that Q be saying when he first starts all his verses off. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Coming straight out of Compton. Crazy motherfucking name, Ice Cube. From a gang called Niggas With Attitude. Like, really listen to what, like, bro, his first lines are never no joke. His first lines are always impeccable. To me, that's just my personal opinion on Cube, and that's why he's one of the greatest.
Man. Okay, Dave. Seeing we're talking about Cube. Favorite Cube album.
See, I didn't gave y'all something to think about now. See?
Favorite Cube album. Yeah. Man, favorite Cube album.
I didn't even think about that just now, to this now after all these years of listening to Cube. And he's in my top five.
And he's in your top five. Yeah, that's why. Greatest Ice Cube album is going to be Death Certificate.
Definitely. Yeah, that's my favorite.
Yeah. Death Certificate.
Yeah, but Death Certificate was just a...
America's Most Wanted. Bro. Greatest. He's definitely the GOAT.
Yeah, and I mean, but when you look at it in terms of Cube, when you look at it from a perspective of it, for what he was able to do, because when we think about that time from, you know, 1990 when he dropped America's Most Wanted, this is coming off of the NWA situation. So it's like,
right.
You know, this is before social media. This is before we see, you know, this is when we kind of get an idea of how scandalous the business can be. Because, like I said, we're not in California. We really were not privy to everything that went on the inside. You know, if you read about it in the magazine, so it's like when we see Cube do what he did at the level he did it, you know, because everybody knew Cube was dope in NWA, but the question was, could he do it on his own? And then he dropped
by
in there
own,
Most Wanted, and we're like, oh, shit. We're like, what the fuck is this? And then he follows it up. I mean, you figure from 1990 to 1994, he drops four straight albums, and all of them are classics.
Yep.
I mean, this dude fucks around and has a Patriots run before Bill Belichick gets to the Patriots. I mean, this is like championship-quality pedigree of penmanship. What now, Dave, when we think about the West Coast today and legends like him, you got other artists today. You know, of course, who laid that groundwork? Of course, the late, great Nipsey and Slim 400. You got Cam in China. You got G Perico. You got A.D., Nesta Farrow, Mozzie, Stevie Joe, Lil Blood. You know, got to shout out my man out in, you know, San Jose, Drew Deasy. Shout out to 408, man. Of course, you know, M.B. Mill, you know, representing Richmond. You know, Stockton. I think it's Stockton he's from, Stockton. You know, I mean, you know, like I said, you know, it's just so many, you know, Roddy Ricch, you know, what is your opinion?
Right.
And of course, Honest Alone, you know, daughter of the legendary Cocaine, you know, I mean, of course, you know, Kendrick is still in there. I mean, Ab Soul, you know, we're seeing, what is your, you and Derek, feeling of all of these burgeoning, like, new acts coming in that are, like, really carrying on that tradition in such grand fashion?
So what is your question? Like, you asked me, like, what do I think about all the
new acts? How do you feel? Yeah, all those artists coming out. How does it feel for you as a producer and just as a fan of hip-hop culture in general to see so many dope new acts coming into the game?
It feels great. Like, I love how it's evolving and it's becoming its own thing. And, you know, everyone has their piece of art to contribute to the culture. I feel like that's what makes it super important. You know what I mean? Everyone's given their own voice, and production wise and music wise, everyone's on top of their game. You know what I'm saying? Like, from everybody you name, from Rowdy to everybody, like, everyone's on top of their A game, and everyone's trying to come with the hottest shit that they can come with. I feel like that's most important. Mm-hmm. Even though a lot of music is segregated because it's different, because, oh, this is for this kind of music and this is for that kind of music, I'm just glad that everyone's on the same page as far as, like, making dope music and collaborating on making music together. That's most important. I feel like that's keeping a lot of the tribe alive out here on the West Coast.
Mm. Yeah, man.
Now, one thing about it, especially from a musician perspective and also from a street culture, because over the past few years, we've seen a proliferation of a lot of heads trying to play with the colors in terms of not really being from there and trying to claim it. And one thing about it is you are a artist, you know, and a businessman. You know, Derek, yourself, the whole crew of 96, you know, Entertainment, you all have established something that is concrete. But also I know y'all watching as spectators, you know, just seeing what's coming in. What do artists have to understand in terms of street culture, especially coming from L.A. and where you see a lot of them? Because back in the day when we look at it from a lot of these artists that were out, like, of course, with Quick, you know, 8, N.W.A., King T, so many others, they had real gang affiliations, but nobody, it wasn't something that was really talked about on Wax. You let the music
speak for itself. Yeah, they wasn't really making gang bang music. I get it.
Right.
You wouldn't have known it unless you really decoded a lot of the lyrics or you really paid attention to the references. But for the most part,
us sisters out here,
we wouldn't even pick up on it.
Yeah, true. This is true.
How do you feel about it where it's kind of become, you know, a thing where a lot of artists who don't really understand street culture are trying to play in it, especially when it can jeopardize their, you know, career from certain levels? Because we've seen a lot of situations from when it has gone bad, from artists getting pressed to artists even getting killed, and not just in California, but from every part, you know, of the country.
Right, right. I feel like it's most important for an artist to be who they are, like, naturally. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're naturally the tough guy and that's who you are and that's who you're going to be, you know, you got to commit to that. My OG told me, you know, my mentor told me, you know, if you're in a group and you the tough guy and you a tough guy, that's who you are in the industry, that's your role, you're going to always get tested everywhere you go.
Yeah.
He was like, so I don't want to be the tough guy. I get it. You know what I'm saying? I get it. Like, you know, but if that's who you naturally are, just know that that's what's going to come with it everywhere you go. You know, if you're going to be that's it's going, because there's someone big and bad in every city, every place you go, everywhere you go. There's always somebody big and bad. You know what I mean? So if you who's the biggest, baddest person in your area and that's what you display and you're going to try to, you know what I mean, you're going to Debo everybody every time you out, then you're going to have to deal with that, and that energy is going to follow you everywhere you go. So, you know, if that's not who you are, then turn it down. That ain't who you are. Like, turn it off. Why are you doing that? Because the real ones are going to see through it, and they're going to press your line every single time.
Right.
I was saying an artist needs to be who they are at all times. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the best way to be in this music industry. Like, you know what I'm saying? Don't try to be a character or something that you're not, because, you know, it'll get you killed.
Yeah, it was like, that's what they got to resort to when they can't really offer anything musically dope, because you got to go to the gimmicks. You got to really prove how tough you are. Whereas at that time with those guys, they didn't have to flex their gang affiliation. So they didn't do that. We was like, okay, we want to prove to be the best music group or the best artist, the best singer. We already have our respect in the streets. We already have our claim to fame in the streets. Let's prove that we're the best group out there and make money.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, you know, one thing about it, man, especially, but when you look at it from it, because when you look at the intrinsic link, oh, and there's one more dude that I got to shout out for that new West movement, man, FT Hop Out. Shout out to FT, man, representing Fruit Town. FT is serious.
Yeah,
Hop Out. Yeah, man, y'all, for those that ain't heard Hop Out, y'all need to check him out. FT is just, he's bananas. One thing about, I mean, when you think about that in terms of the business aspect of it, because when you look at it from an end of getting into it to escape it, sometimes, and we've seen situations where we look at a lot of these situations where we feel like some artists are hustling backwards, because I'm like, dude, this is, you're rapping to try to get out the street life. Why are you trying to jump into something? Yeah.
Yes.
And how do you feel social media has started to play in terms of where artists are using that kind of as an artificial express to exposure as opposed to an organic growth to reach an audience?
You know, a lot of it isn't real. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of that isn't real. Like, focus on how many fans you got, not how many followers you have. There's a difference. And I feel like some artists, you know, don't know the difference, but there's really a difference. You know what I'm saying? Like, you need to interact with your fans. Like, it's not about, you know, that artificial follower number count and all of that stuff, because in reality, it's all about who's really rocking with you and can you sell, can you turn these followers into money? That's what it's about.
Mm. Mm,
and if you can turn these followers into money, you're going to be successful. But you got to give them something to buy into. And you know what I'm saying? You can't just act like you're one thing on social media, and then when you get to a show, you book a show out, and you can't sell a room full of 30 people because that's not real, that's not authentic. So, you know, the best thing to do is always to be hands on, be on a one-on-one basis with your fans. But the most important thing is that you know how to turn your followers into profit. You know what I'm saying? That's what it's all about. Navigate that.
Yeah.
Worry about trying to navigate that, and not like how to be more popular or how to get a blue check. You know what I'm saying? Because you can be successful without a blue check. That ain't got nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. King and myself, we've been doing this show for some years now, and we've had the pleasure to talk to so many artists, you know, from all over the country and this world, you know, and the world at large. And one thing about it that, you know, we always talk about is how, you know, especially with King's background extensively in journalism and me being a lifelong hip-hop nerd, we see it in terms of following. This is what we do in terms of our job. You know, it is mm-hmm. our job as journalists to follow people in terms of really seeing what their movement is. One thing about our show is that we don't care if you're big or small. If you got dope shit, we're bringing you on. And, you know, when we see a lot of artists, you know, some of them, you know, who are supposed to have all these major followings, you know, it's like they got 50,000 followers. But like you said, it's like, but they can't even sell out a big show. I mean, they can't even sell out a show.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it's like, okay, now, are you buying? I mean, let's put it out there because we know what happens. There are those programs that, you know, will artificially inseminate and, you know, create, quote-unquote, numbers on your IG and everything, you know, those bots.
Right.
And then when it's actually put to the test, like physics, you find it's hard as fuck to launch it like a rocket
mm-hmm.
because, you know, once you get, you know, once you really got to blast off with it, you ain't got no audience to blast with. And, you know, and then, but it's like they'll swear up and down on social media that they're so lit, they got all these fans, but it's like, where are your, I'm like, are you going to be like Ghostface or Rakim, 30, 40 years in a game and still can do a show and rock it? Redman and Method Man, legends in their 50s and still doing it at a high level. You know, you can't fake a following. The people that rock with you, Ice Cube, Snoop, Dub C, you know, all of them can, Nas, you know, shout out CMG, representing Conscious Daughters in Oakland, you know, E-40, you know, I mean, they all can do shows and they're going to do it. And it's going to be a great following, even on independent level, you know, with a lot of these artists coming up. And it's like G Perico, So Way Out. And I mean, he's got his movement going. And we asked artists out here today, how are you really moving it in terms of being able to bring about a real, kind of push? Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And
they know that what's really dope about, and I mentioned this many times about the West, is that y'all are also getting behind a lot of the younger generation coming up, and therefore that moves the culture forward. You got a lot of young hitters coming up there.
Right. I feel like that's always something that we always have to do. Like every culture, you know, we have to do that because, you know, it's a young man's game.
Mm-hmm.
But young men don't run the game. You know what I'm saying? So somebody got to be behind the talent and show them how to navigate through this and, you know, these potholes and stuff they got to be aware of. Because they're young, they may not know. They don't have the experience. You know what I'm saying?
What do artists have to understand coming into the game about what it's going to take in terms of the sacrifice, the determination, the ups and downs, the successes and the failures? And that's just a short beginning list. What do artists really have to understand about what this entails?
I always tell artists, like, make sure you're doing it for the right reason. Like, know what the reason is why you're getting into this, what you're doing it for. Because if you're just getting into this to do this for some money real quick, you ain't going to last. Because if you don't love this, you're going to go through so much bullshit and so much nonsense that you're gonna quit. So just save yourself the trouble. If you don't love it enough, don't even do it. If you just want to do it for a check and it's a money grab, and you know what I mean, you want to do it for a check and it's a money grab, you can make some money real quick and that's your goal, then okay, do you. You know what I'm saying? But if you want to get in this for the right reasons, you know, if you want to do it the right way, then I suggest go about doing it the right way. Learn your business. First thing you need to know how to do is figure out how you get paid. Then once you figure out how you get paid, then start finding ways of how you can access that money, like how you get to that money, what you got to do to get to that money, and how you get paid. Those are the most important things. Learning the business is more critical than making the music. Because you can make money in the business and not even make music.
Paperwork's got to make the paperwork in terms of your contracts, and it will make your paper in terms of your profit work.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, yeah. How do you feel in reference to how music is being processed and how it is being distributed and consumed in reference to physical copies as opposed to, as opposed to digital sales? Do you feel like in terms of the for the legacy of it, for really the collector value of it, how do you feel? Because some people say, well, you know, nobody buys CDs anymore. King and myself, we vehemently disagree because we value our CD and magazine collections. we will go to war if someone tries to take our shit behind it. How do you feel about it in terms of where, you know, about how it's marketed and advertised now?
Now I feel like the experience of music has changed, and not to say that that's a good thing or a bad thing, just that it's different. Like I'm a fan of the legacy of going to the store, buying the record, opening it up, putting it in, press and play, listening to the credits, reading the credits while I listen to it, reading up, because I'm a student and I want to study and I want to learn and I want to see who's doing what. I want to know who my competition is. I want to know who's making these records that I'm enjoying, who's behind it, who's mixing it, who's playing the flute, who's that guy on the bass. Like, those are things that I want to know, inquisitively, just as a musician, and as somebody that takes the industry seriously, you know what I'm saying? But the experience behind purchasing music has changed. You know, now we just stream it, and whatever Spotify says up there is just what it is. It's not really an experience. You're not really experiencing the music in its entirety, and in its whole, as the artist may have intended, you know what I mean? Like, with the artwork and with the pictures and the graphics, as opposed to just streaming it online with, you know what I mean, a certain font that Spotify picked, and that's just how it looks. You know what I mean? Like, it's the whole process is different. Even though it's a lot more convenient and faster, it's just not as personal as it used to be. You know what I mean? I'm a fan of buying music. Like, I still buy vinyls. You know, I buy vinyls to this day. I still buy CDs. I still go thrift store shopping and go look for CDs and go look for old hip-hop albums I might not have. I go to the thrift store all the time and do that. That's just me, though, but I'm a collector of the art, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a fan of it. So that experience for me is different than anybody else's, but I feel like now it's just at a point where everything is just kind of click and go, and we're not really experiencing the music in its whole, you know, because our experience with the music is a lot more faster now. It's a lot more stuff coming out more frequently. It's a lot more music coming out. So you have to be on top of it. You know what I mean? You got to really subscribe to the people that you like and gravitate to their music. But I'm a fan of purchasing music and buying it and reading the credits and getting the magazine and looking at the magazine. You know, I got, like you guys, I got magazines from 10 years ago that I opened up just to go back and look to see who made it and who didn't. Like, damn, what happened to this guy?
Yeah.
I think they did that purposely, man. I think they did that because with YouTube and streaming, it's very easy to manipulate numbers to make a lot of acts that they really want to push bigger than who they really are. Because, you know,
right. The
protocol used to be people know your units. Like, if they buy your units or they buy you, you could track that with the sound scan. Like, you automatically know who's feeling your music, who's buying. You could look at the charts. With streaming, you can manipulate those numbers. You could boost it one day. You could boost it up to a million. I've seen niggas even get platinum plaques from YouTube. And I ain't know how that even exists.
It's crazy.
Like, oh, he can't sell units, but they give him a plaque on YouTube. Like, what? They changed the protocol.
They changing the protocol. It's different, man.
It's mad different, man, because it's like, because one thing about it with what we do, we understand independent hustle, so we're never going to shame anybody for doing it, but we do kind of want a standard that is established and maintained in terms of quality, in terms of putting the ample work in that yields results and comes from a real place. When we look at one of our good friends, you know, like Bonnie Dollars representing Crenshaw, you know, she really is to the grind with her, you know, with her process. She puts in the work to do what she needs to do to get her music out. And she has not ever cheated the process to make it. So is Children of the Culture, lovers of it, people who understand because of what we do being independent and how much work we put into doing this show. We got an issue with people who try to skate on a whole bunch of smoke and mirrors, and then it turns out to be nothing but a bleep and a blank when it comes to they think they got the sauce. I'm like, nigga, your shit ain't even lukewarm, devoid of flavor, and you're talking about you got a secret ingredient that's going to make everybody else jealous. I'm like, if anything, you done counterfeited Joe recipe off of everybody else and still can't get it tasting right.
Wow.
You know?
That's crazy.
You know?
It exists. That's some real shit. It's out there for sure like that.
So what's the creative process like for you going into the studio in terms of a beat in reference to how you want to orchestrate it? Do you go by what the artist brings, or do you already have something loaded and you just kind of let them vibe with it?
A little bit of both. Sometimes I just try to get with them and see what's in their head of, you know, what I could do to help them take whatever they're doing to the next level. So sometimes it's just me playing what I already have, came up with on my own, and sometimes it's us making something from scratch because, you know, it has to be a certain way, which is dope. I love creating from scratch personally myself the most. But some artists come ready to go. You know, some artists come like with a theory in mind. I might already have something that fits that, and so it works that way too sometimes. But I enjoy working from scratch the most.
Who are some of the producers that really influenced you when you really got your sound going? Because you got guys, I mean, who were like your favorites coming up once you really got serious with it?
Man, my influences are like Dr. Dre, Jay Dilla, P-Rock, DJ Premier, Battlecat, DJ Quick, EA Ski, Ann Banks, RZA. It's so many cats. Large Professor. Oh my gosh.
LP, extra P.
Bruh, it's so many. Lord Finesse, Diamond D for sure. Salon Remy. Man, I could be here all day talking about producers. All these people influence my sound, you know what I'm saying, on some degree, like, on every level.
You mentioned Salon Remy, Lord Finesse, Diamond D, Premier. Look, that's already a great list as is. Salon Remy, when I first heard that remix he did for the Bush Babies, Remember We, back in 95, I was like, oh my God.
Oh my God. Yo, phenomenal.
That was like, that's
you,
still
you
one of
no
my
true,
favorite Salon tracks.
You ain't no true East Coast head if you don't know nothing about Diamond D, man.
Man, Stunt Blunt and hip hop.
For real. That's the truth, That's the truth. Right.
But you know,
it's so many.
But when you look at that, listen to that time of the day, you know, and King, we look at that era of hip hop where, you know, because when you name all these producers, they're so diverse. I mean, you know, and but it shows your appreciation for just the music in general. I mean, look, when you mentioned Aunt Bank, I'm instantly thinking of Menace to Society soundtrack, Packing a Gun. I'm like, man.
Ooh. Right. Man, bro, it's so many. I can keep going because there's so many people that I listen to. I listen to so many different varieties of so many different producers and music, like, you know, Rick Rock over to
the Federation. Yeah,
from Rick Rock over to who am I throwing to after Rick Rock? Dallas Austin, Organized Noise. Organized Noise influenced me a lot.
Shout out to Rico Wade and all the, Rico Wade, Pat Murray.
Yeah, man. Shout out to Pat Ray. Yes, and Sleepy. Yes, man. Them my G's right there. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just influenced by so much soul and so much music, especially just on the hip hop. You know, we just talking hip hop, just on the hip hop level. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many great, phenomenal people that touched this genre of music, that elevated it and took it somewhere else that we didn't even have no idea about that we could go to. So, you know, I'm always on trying to keep that alive.
Mm-hmm.
For the people. We got to do that.
Most definitely.
Another question I want to shoot for you, man. I know we talk a lot about Nipsey Hussle in our shows, man. Like, he been followers of his career, you know, through the ups and downs, going back to Nipsey's in the house. Then following up when he Renaissance on Crenshaw, and I know you did some work with him on that. What was it like working with that dude, and what was the energy in his vibe?
Working with Nipsey?
Yes.
Man, Nip was like one of the most down to earth dudes like ever. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was just that guy that was like always so serious, so militant, but yet so funny and so just like laughable. You know what I mean? Like, he was always on his business. He always was like, you know what I mean? He always had something for you to read. You know what I'm saying? We'll sit and have arguments. Me and Nipsey would sit up and have arguments about distribution deals. You know what I'm saying? Shit like that. Like, that's who he was. Like, you know what I mean? You gonna talk to him, it's gonna be, you know what I mean? It can be some regular hood shit, or it's going to be some business shit. Yeah, it's going to be some business shit. You know, we would sit here and argue about, you know, should I do a deal with Empire, or should I go with CD Baby? We have arguments like that, you know what I'm saying? Shit like that. And he was just one of them dudes that was so down to earth and yet so so wise beyond his years, you know what I mean? Like, so wise and wisdom beyond his years. And he was always just a cat that was always dedicated, you know what I mean? Like, from every aspect. I remember one night we had a studio session late night, and it's probably like 3 in the morning. And he's talking to me like, man, I got to go to Vegas tomorrow. Me and Boog going to Vegas. I'm like, you going to Vegas? Yeah, me and my girl, we got to go to Vegas. And I'm like, when you going to go? He's like, shit. And he's like, after I leave the studio, I'm going to hop on the freeway. We're going to just go to Vegas, be there in the morning. And he actually really did that shit, tired as fuck at all. He, like, left the studio, picked her up, and they went to Vegas. Like, that's just who he is. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's just who he was. He was dedicated. He put his mind to, like, this is what we going to do. We going to do it. We doing it. That's what we doing. And, you know, studio sessions were always dope, always great. He always wanted to get the best out of every record that he could, you know what I'm saying, that he could do. If he wasn't feeling it, he would just stop. Like, if he was working on a record and he just ain't feeling it, it ain't that he's not going to do the song. He's just not going to do the song right now because he's just not in that space. And he was that guy that had patience. He had patience with his music. He would sit on the song and come back to it next month and reopen it up and then finish the verse. Like, he was that guy.
Wow.
He was patient with his music. Yeah. He didn't rush it. He wasn't like, you know, some artists I worked with, I noticed would be like, oh, I got to finish the song so I can move on with my life. He wasn't like that. He was more focused on, like, getting the record to sound the best he could make it sound.
Now, and one thing about it, Dave, because you, and we got a shout out, because when we're speaking on Nipsey, we got a shout out so much of that marathon crew. We got to shout out Brent Hurst and Shooter. We got to shout out Jay Stone. We got to shout out, of course, G.I. Joe. We had him on the show last year. We got to shout out Hatman the Gunman. You know, and we got to shout out Mike and Keys, too, man. Yeah, man. I mean, when you look at Nipsey's movement in terms of what he did, And we can't forget Black Sam, man. We can't forget Black Sam. When we look at what Nipsey did and what he was able to build from an independent level, what was that like in terms of just watching him literally do this? You know, I mean, the stuff he did, y'all, and we know the history of the course, the Crenshaw mixtape that was sold for 100, that Jay-Z bought 100 copies just because he respected the hustle of it. Then we look at the mailbox money that it was actually available for a free download, but if you bought it from him, it was $1,000, but he would send you something personal of his, like whether some shoes, a T-shirt, one of his rhyme books. What did he understand about marketing and interacting with the fans and believing in yourself that nobody else did at the time?
I felt like he understood being direct to customer. I feel like he understood that from a business standpoint. You know what I mean? And that may have been from other businesses or other ventures that he was into. I feel like he was just more focused on being on a straight direct to customer basis. You know what I'm saying? He was always about cutting out the middle people, cutting out the middleman. He was always more about getting directly to the customer, straight to him. Like direct, like, you know, he was one of the first people that was opening everybody's eyes to that kind of mind frame of thinking in music. And, you know, in music, it's always been about, oh, go to the distributor and then the fans go get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, instead of having it be relied on you. No, he was more like, get it from me. Get it straight from me, straight to you. And that in this process in itself helped him become more relatable to the fans and to the public. So he was more accessible. He seemed more accessible. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, you could just reach out to Nipsey and get something from him. Now it's like I'm interacting with this real artist I'm a fan of. That's highly impressive. Everybody wasn't ready to take on that full task, you know what I'm saying? But him and his team was ready. They were ready to do it, and they did it. And they were successful at doing it. It was inspiring. You know what I mean? It was inspiring to see somebody doing that, coming from the turf, coming from the same area, you know what I'm saying, the same streets we walk, going to the same schools we go to, and he's doing it his own way, and it's working, and it's making him successful. That was inspiring as fuck. Nipsey the Great.
Yeah, man, and it was very rare at that time for people, like even with mailbox money, people were paying, you know, a huge sum of money for a mixtape. So you know, the marketing, he was a marketing genius in that aspect, and plus the music also spoke volumes, because to make people pay out of pocket, especially when we were going through, you know, changing economic times for a mixtape. That goes to show you how powerful the music is.
Huge.
These guys can't even get it done for free, let alone 1,000.
He can't get it done for free.
But it's crazy, y'all, because when you look at it, because this is something that when you look at what was happening, you know, like I said, when you're looking at that independent hustle of it, you're dealing with a lot of artists who, when you look at guys like Mike Jones back in the day, when he was part of that Texas, you know, swinging and banging, you know, movement, when they were really coming up big, him, Chamillionaire, Paul Wall, Shingo Bling, all of them, when you're looking at...
You know what?
Hold on, what, nigga? I think T-Mass got lost for a minute.
Yeah, I got cut off for a second. Yeah, I'm back on. Yeah, but when you look at that situation in terms of what was happening, you know, when you look at all these artists at different regions that, you know, they really find ace.
Right.
You know, and a lot of these guys become millionaires, and girls, they become millionaires before, you know, without even getting a deal, you know, in terms of, because they had the street money that they made off of the music is, you know, you look at Too Short when he was in the Bay selling, you know, when, you know, where Steve was with 75 Girls Records, you know, and how
right.
he was selling it out the trunk. You look at E-40 when they started Sick With It in like, what, 89, 90, you know, and they just had a distribution deal with Jive. And to this day, Uncle 40, that's what he does. He maintains
right.
his independence as a label. He has distribution, but Sick With It is 100% his.
is. Yep. Yep.
Now, a lot of people talk the boss talk. How important is it to have the boss mentality and understanding of discipline and direction before you make that declaration of boss status?
Man, it's hella important. It's super important because not everybody can do that job. And it's not a bad thing, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's not made to be the CEO, you know what I'm saying? Some people just aren't cut out for it because it comes with a lot of hard decisions. A lot of trust is instilled in you, you know what I'm saying? You're basically controlling someone's well-being as far as, like, being able to market them and put them out the right way and do it correctly. So, you know, it takes a lot of commitment to do something like that. And you got to be ready for that job, you know what I'm saying? If you can wear that hat, great. Everybody can't. So, you know, some people got to work and some people got to tell other people how to work. And that's just simply what it is. There's nothing wrong, you know what I'm saying? And maybe one day you'll get to the point where now that you've learned enough, now you can teach people how to work. But it's very important for you to understand what you're getting into before you just start labeling yourself something like as a CEO. You know what I mean? It just ain't something cool to say. It comes with a lot of responsibility, and you got to be ready for that.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, that's the one thing about, I think, with social media times because, you know, like we were talking earlier, you know, everybody talks about how they're a boss, this, that, and the other, but I'm like, you know, just because you have $1 million doesn't mean you go out and blow $500,000 on a Bentley, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because it's about having the money or whatever, you know, resources you have and reinvesting it into your career. It's not about trying to make that big splash. It's about maintaining, you know, you being in that ocean, you know, or you drown in it. You know, and I think that's something that a lot of artists here have to understand now is that there is a process before the progress. You know, there's perseverance and there's endurance before you cross the finish line. You know, there is the training that goes into, you know, and, you know, being able to develop it, you know, because this is something that's not a sprint in terms of a quick finish.
Right.
This is something that is a long and arduous process to achievement. As you continue on in your career, you know, expanding your brand, what are your aspirations? You know, D, the whole 96 team, you know, what do y'all aspire to do in terms of continuing excellence and preserving the longevity and respect that you all have so honorably and, you know, attained?
Man, we pretty much stand by the fact that we'll never compromise the music, you know what I'm saying? The quality. Like, we'll never compromise the quality, no matter what. Like, whatever it is, the quality of the content that we're creating always has to be at a high level. And I feel like that is one of the things that's going to definitely separate us, because we're not doing no gimmicky, you know what I'm saying? It ain't no gimmicks. It ain't no game, no gimmicks. Like, this is just real. This is just real shit over here. So if you down with doing something real and doing something authentic, then you're welcome. But if if you want to play games and do something else, or, you know, you chasing a check, we ain't over here doing that. That ain't our calling. So we'll stay away from all of that. And we'll leave that to y'all out there to do it that way, but we're going to do it our way. And we're going to just focus on creating the best quality content we can create for our fans. And, you know what I mean, no matter who the artist is, that's always our goal. And that's just something we're going to stick to. That's just like, you know what I mean, you see something with our logo on it, you're going to automatically know it's quality, because that's just who it is, no matter if you know the artist or not. That's just something that we're building for the history of our people. That's what we own.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's important. You know, I think it's all about, you know, maintaining a brand and building a brand and maintaining the integrity of that brand. And I think a lot of artists don't really understand that, you know, once you come into a certain level of it, people begin, you know, a lot of times we see people that act a certain way and they begin to try to, they don't understand that when you're looking at it long term, you know, certain silly shenanigans don't play well in a corporate world, and not even from a corporate world.
Right.
Well, not only that, but also just a respect level. Because when people feel like you done disrespected them, especially when it wasn't warranted, you know, it's going to not sit well with people that you're trying to do business with. And somebody will say, well, you know, I'm going to do me, you know, can't nobody run these, you know, I'm like, well, depending on who you're dealing with, yeah, yeah. I'm like, you better bow down and kill. Yeah.
Until I see your name on a check, you ain't running nothing.
Exactly.
For real.
Yeah, you know, everybody want to get all assertive and everything, talking about, you know, how they get down and how, you know, nobody going to run them. And I'm like, yeah, but guess what? Those people may, you know, I'm like, yeah, but those people also got a lot of influence in terms of deciding whether you're going to work or not.
Yep.
You know.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah, you know, and I think also, too, y'all, it doesn't cost anything to be nice to people, to be respectful, because, you know, and it's okay to just live a regular life. So many artists try to act like they're trying to live out these wild fantasies, these wild escapades online. I'm like, dude, there is nothing wrong with doing your music and going the fuck home and relax.
Right, right, at all. Nothing wrong with that.
You know, so, I mean, so, but as when you see the state of it today, where do you see hip-hop at and musically, and where do you think we're headed in terms of, you know, how we continue on with it? Where do you think the culture is right now?
I feel like we're about to start seeing a lot of subgenres come about, and hopefully it's something that we can kind of stick to, because hip-hop is growing and it's becoming this ever-evolving, changing thing. And I feel like, you know, just like rock and roll, we're going to have to start sub-genreing hip-hop because it's growing into its own thing. You know what I mean? It's still young. It's still one of the youngest forms of music. And it's still growing. It's still changing forms, you know what I mean, daily. And I feel like a lot of sub-genres are going to start coming out, even though we kind of have sub-genres now, but they're not taken seriously as sub-genres. I feel like that's something we're going to start getting into a lot more as far as music is concerned. Then also, I feel like we need to start creating something for ourselves as far as like award shows and acknowledgments and awards, because, you know, a lot of these other industries don't understand us. So they don't know what makes it. They don't comprehend what makes it. They don't know what makes it great. They don't understand why we feel it's great, and they just can't get it. And instead of us trying to like conform or get them to understand us, we need to just create our own that we value, that we put the value on, and it means something to us. And that's what's most important, because they didn't start hip-hop, we started hip-hop, and we gotta always remember that. I just feel like that's something that we need to work towards, you know what I mean, and we'll be all right. It's gonna always keep evolving and keep growing. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's just about, you know, establishing more of a center base of what exactly hip-hop is and what hip-hop isn't. So they just can't say anything's hip-hop because it's somebody black doing it, or, you know what I'm saying, or it sounds urban. You know what I mean? Like, we have to get away from that. We have to identify it, you know what I mean? Because hip-hop is something that you live, and, like, rapping is something you do.
Yeah.
So when they be like, oh, he makes... You know what I mean? So, he makes rap music. No, rapping is just something that you do, but, like, hip-hop is the way you live. It's how you get down. It's how you walk. You talk. It's how you communicate. It's how you influence. It's how you dress. So, you know, when it's on my best hip-hop album and it's a rap album up there, I have a problem with that, because to me that's a rap album. That's not a hip-hop album. They're two different things.
Yeah, and when you're dealing with hip-hop albums, for people that don't know, hip-hop album actually is a conceptualized piece that actually aims at a certain theme. You know, it is constructed
right.
In a way of real MCing. Rap is just rhyming words together over a beat, and it doesn't really have an aim. It's just something catchy. Hip-hop,
right.
With hip-hop music, is something deeper, to where you're actually expressing yourself in a real way. Like Kendrick's Good Kid, Mad City, that is a hip-hop album. Jay-Z's Reasonable Doubt, that is a hip-hop album. Nas is Illmatic, hip-hop album. E-40's Gift of Gab, that is a hip-hop album. Mitchy Slick's Triggeration Station, that is a gangsta-ass hip-hop album.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, and you're right, Day, there has to be a definition that is defined, because when you have people trying to mash it all together, there becomes a gray area of opaqueness that people cannot fully comprehend or make the dissemination between, in terms of the difference between.
Between two,
and that is, exactly. They
and
can't make the difference, and that's where, exactly, and that's where a lot of times the music starts getting a bad rap because everybody's, you know, because there's a lot of subliminals that the media will use in print to try to, you know, make us look less civilized and unintelligent. And, you know, we're all intelligent individuals. So we understand the power of language and how from that language it influences people's perception of a culture and the people that represent that culture. But it's individuals like yourself, and we hope that we're doing our job as well in that part of showing that hip-hop is a very rich, multicultural, intelligent, expressive, relevant, valid culture that should be respected for its merits of where it came from and the story that it tells from different backgrounds and experiences.
Right.
You know, Dave, we got 5 minutes.
It's a matter of just getting the right people that understand.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of just getting the right people that understand the culture and the position of teaching. That's all that's all about.
Exactly, King, exactly.
That's deep.
Exactly.
That's deep.
You know.
That's real shit, though.
You can't,
that's real.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, you can't ask somebody who, black or white, doesn't understand the culture, who didn't grow up in it, to actually have their best interest, have your best interest at heart,
right,
putting out a project, because you know the people who are counterfeit, who claim that they are, the fact is they're only in it for a profit, but they're not into it for the preservation, and there is a difference.
Mm. Yes, there's definitely a difference.
I mean, we got 5 minutes left, Dave. King and myself, we have thoroughly enjoyed this. Derek, shout out to you again
and
for putting this together,
o'clock,
man. We appreciate
you. This 2 hours went by like a breeze.
Yeah.
Like a breeze, for real. Well, man, anything else I want to ask you?
I mean, any shout outs you want to give? Look, this is the time. Look, pub yourself. Anything you got coming,
Man, everybody get ready to follow me. Follow me on Instagram at day_one, DAE_ONE. Shout out to my whole entire team, my R3L fam, and my 96 recording family. Y'all know who y'all are, the whole squad. Everybody listening, get ready for this music compilation I'm about to drop with all females. It's going to be an all-female music compilation coming out in February. Produced by me, called Day One Diamond Collective, and it's all female artists from all across the country doing their shit on these records, singing, rapping, and everything. So y'all get ready for that. Also, be on the lookout for my be on the lookout for my artists that I'm in the studio with, working heavy grind time, from Shea Fields, Carte Blanche, Magdo, Danny Adams, and the list goes on, man. We're going to keep on trucking. We're going to keep on living. And we're going to keep on striving to keep this music thing alive, man, and bringing out the best shit we can. Yep.
Yeah, man. You know we're going to be continuing to push that line for y'all, man, because y'all got a future legendary movement in the works, man. So, you know, we got to do our part.
Yes, indeed, man. I appreciate that, for real, man. Thank y'all for having me, man, too. For real, I'm at the studio now. I'm gonna get back to work and get back on these boards and start making beats. My boy EA Ski, he's sending his sound pack with his drum sounds in it. I gotta make a beat with his drum sounds and send it to him. So let me get to work, man. I appreciate y'all having me on, for real. Thank y'all, for real. God bless you. Y'all have a good night, man. And I hope much success. And we're gonna be in contact soon because we're gonna do this again, for real.
Definitely. And you know you're welcome back anytime. And Derek, thank you again for this. And you know, like I said, anybody y'all got from the crew y'all wanna, you know, bring on the show, just hit us and we'll be happy to book it.
Let's do it. Yes, sir. Yes, indeed.
All right, man. And I appreciate y'all again. Right. God bless. One love. And thank you again. You know.
Yeah, we definitely gonna stay in touch, man.
King, take us
out of here. Yeah, man. On that note, we out of here. Check us out tomorrow night on Screwball Radio with my man Black Poet and Comet. We're going to be having the United Kingdom version. We're going to be showing love to the UK. So all you spitters,
yep,
send us some music. We're going to be playing that on the air. And we out of here.
Peace.